Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the UrfoCast Does Captain Scarlet Expo 2068. And this is another one that I did remember, the imagery of Captain Scarlet hanging on the outside of a helicopter trying to get into a wooden box to defuse a reactor is quite memorable, and sort of a repeat in some ways of the setup of Big Ben Strikes Again. It's the same truck with a reactor in the back, pretty much. And I think I enjoyed this one more than that. The whole kind of investigative thing of trying to figure out what the Mistron threat is, Spectrum doing their work well in this instance, going, ah, this is the thing that might be a threat, let's check it out. Ah, it is the thing that's going to be a threat, let's find out what's happened to it. That's fun, and for once, Captain Scarlet has to do the whole indestructible thing. Like, it feels ages since we've had an episode where he's had to put himself into a place where he's gonna die. I can't remember the last time that happened. Though, bizarre that having been blown up, his body's not in bits being taken back to Cloud Base to recover. But anyway, I'll forgive it that. But just again, what kind of a world has the world become if we're just randomly transporting nuclear devices in trucks that can be that can be just taken over by the Mistrons? Because in spite of the whole, like, oh, we were trying to be unobtrusive, well, yes, that's probably good from an Earthling point of view, but the Mistrons clearly knew it was there. Nothing is safe from them. Nice role for Captain Black, though. Like, he does his usual kind of setting up, Mistronizing this week's victim, but then he gets to play a part in the thing. Again, why he doesn't just shoot the guy and get the guy to do his bidding as a Mistron agent is another thing. I don't know. Maybe this is it. Captain Black just enjoys all the fun of the fair, and so he's like, well, we're gonna do that, and then we're gonna do this. Maybe he has some autonomy. Maybe he's like, I'm gonna do this my way. Or it could just all be part of the Mistron game. Their revenge is not just terrorizing humanity as a whole, but selected individuals. In this case, the poor guy with the helicopter controls, which reminded me a bit of the car park from Moving Your Dead in Thunderbirds. You've got somebody whose job it is to sit and maneuver a couple of levers, in this case controlling helicopters. And then you have the convenient witness. Again, why they don't just kill him and make sure he becomes a Mistron agent when they've actually left a witness. Just this episode, more than most recently, it feels like the Mistrons playing the game. We're kind of having fun. And nice to see the return of the rolling road with the chase sequence. Poor chap basically ends up being run off the road as a human and then run off the road as a Mistron agent. Crashing into your glass windscreen kills you, whether you're a human or a Mistron agent. So yeah, nothing special, but fun. And we get the Mistron vanishing power again. Yeah, I don't really have much more to say about this one, other than enjoyed it. And now it's time for this week's Spectrum Agent Report with Michael, my co-host from the UrfoCast.
Now, the important thing about this whole episode is that there is no actual Expo 68. They're building it, which is fine. So that's really not that worthy of going into. You know what? I've really enjoyed this sort of rewatch and chat about Captain Scarlet as it's been going on, knowing about the Mistron detectors and all of these things I'd forgotten from my childhood. But it's been a really nice journey so far, and this is a pretty good episode. Well, in my view. Yes, it starts off with your standard, here's something, and you need to click these three buttons in order to stop the nuclear explosion. It's the sort of opposite of, you know, what's-his-face's pistol. But that's what Captain Scarlet does. It shows you the storyline, it shows you the setup, and you progress through it. But watching this, I've noticed a few things that previously I was unaware of. Colonel White turns his back on the rest of his crew whenever he's on the phone. But you never see that there's a big video screen on the other wall, and because there's a whole drop-down headgear thing going on, you assume it's audio only. But he's in a big open-plan office. But every time he's finished a call with Scarlet or somebody else, he turns his big swivelly chair with his big control panel. That means he's always facing the same buttons because the control panel moves, rather than his desk moving, I suppose that makes sense if he's always needs these important buttons in front of him with whoever he's talking to. But there's only other one other person in the room. It's a bit style over substance. It's as if the designers went, right, Colonel White, I've got this round thing for you. It's going to be great. But when will I use it? All the time? Are you sure? Yes. And that's kind of where we go with that. So I'd never really thought about that. Now, the one thing that had always been a little bugbear of mine with all of these things, and with all of the puppet things, is the hands. Now, I know you can't make the hands, but I always thought, from a design point of view, it would have been easier to make sort of fake hands that looked a bit more puppety that you would wear as a glove that you could then operate the close-up stuff. The reason that I focus on this specifically in this story is because there's the scene with the jetpack. Brilliant idea, the jetpack, because you don't have to have them running or climbing or any of the things that, you know, the stringy puppet people don't really enjoy doing. You put them in a jetpack, see, you know, Fireball XL5 and a host of Thunderbirds as well. There's all floating platforms that get you from A to B and have a bit of, you know, bit of tension involved. So they fly him up, and then all of a sudden he gets out a jigsaw. And you know it's going to be a close-up because it's an ordinary 1960s jigsaw that he uses to cut a very, very accurate circular hole in the side of the wooden crate. Now, at the beginning of the episode, when the, well, we'll call it a bomb, shall we? When the reactor is removed using the lovely hover loader into the big wooden crate and then taken off somewhere, all I was thinking was, why is it a wooden pallet? Why is it a wooden crate? I mean, containerization had happened by this point, or it was coming in, so everyone knew what a container was. And they're all a specific size. Think about it. Containers are the size they are because of the size of a horse. And this is important. A horse is a certain width, and train tracks were originally designed to be pulled by horses. So a train track is defined by coal pulling horses and ponies and things. So that width of train track has been standard throughout the world, apart from in Russia, for hundreds and hundreds of years. Because of the width that's standardized of a horse's, or a horse, the back end of a horse, you've then got the standardization of the size of train tracks, and because of the standardization of the size of train tracks and tunnels, you've then got the standardization of container wagons, which need to go on both of these things. So everything is defined by the size of a horse's behind. Someone explained this to me years ago, and I was fascinated by that. But here we have that taken to the next logical conclusion. We've got a container wagon on the back of a helicopter that is defined by the size of a horse's behind. That's not what I set out to talk about in this episode. And you know what? I do ramble, and I'm known for it. So fair enough. You get what you pay for. Let's get back to the actual episode. The Mysterons replace the reactor and the driver. Logically, it would take a lot less energy just to replace the driver, but it's not as exciting, and people going over the cliff and then another truck mysteriously just rolling on. You never see the Mysterons create something. You just see it arrive, finished, like an Amazon delivery thing. Yes, they've got the whole, you know, circles that move over things to do the photocopying. But the actual production process must take some time, and it just seems to not. A bit like the rebuilding of their own city, which leads more credence to the whole Mysterons are basically just having a game with us. They're trying to have us killed with our own things by giving us alternative timelines with people having different motivations. But let's face it, because of that argument, that kind of poo-poos the argument of Captain Black turning up going, if you want to survive, do as exactly as I say, rather than just copying the bloke, because people are copied with their skills, and having him pilot the helicopter, you know, the Mysteron copy, perhaps they'd used up all of their, I don't know, photocopy credit that day. But what I'm doing is I'm doing what we always do, which is take stuff apart too much. And we end up with a storyline that you would just go, oh, that's not working, that storyline doesn't work. And we would have been robbed of a lovely story. Yes, the whole dangling helicopter thing with, and then it's sliding around and having to put the fuse back in, which has got a part number, which is very useful. And all of that business it uses technology of the time. We've covered that in this podcast. And you have to have done that. You have to have used technology of the time that is applicable and then applied it to your futuristic stories set 100 years in the future. It's all forgivable. It's not even a crime. It's a cracking story from Captain Scarlet. Not much happens. In the long run, there's not much going on because, oh, here's the threat. We might blow up the seaboard. Where's that going to be? That's the entire side of America. Let's find them. Let's send the angels in. Oh, here's a thought. There's a lot of angels banking in this. Now, I know this is actually a flaw with actual aircraft. Has anyone considered an aeroplane with a glass bottom so you could look out and then, I suppose bombers in the Second World War did that, so someone could look out and then see where they actually were. But there's a lot of angels flying over and then tilting slightly so they can look out of the window at the ground below. Perhaps a two-person angel where one person's, you know, looking out, maybe it's a screens because of the SPV. Oh my God, we were robbed of a hidden SPV scene. I do love those so much, but it's usually a garage somewhere. Right, I have rambled, but I basically just want to say, great episode. Yeah, actually a good episode. If ever you needed to show someone what Captain Scarlet was, that would be it. The only downfall, as far as I'm concerned, is you've got that exciting helicopter fly straight into what I can only describe possibly as a half-built car park. And then the next scene you see is Captain Scarlet with a slight damage, including his uniform, which only got slight damage, being taken back. And I'm on my way home. Well, he is on his way home, but if Captain Scarlet gets blown up into pieces, is it like Captain Jack, where the pieces reform into one? Or is that just too complicated and it would look terrible as a puppet thing anyway? I've not even mentioned the axeman in the woods getting killed, or he's being knocked out, but so they could remember the name of the helicopter company as a little MacGuffin. It's a nice little storyline. It just felt a bit hurried at the end. Look, I've said too much. In fact, I've said enough. So there you go. Captain Scarlet, yeah. And in a noise, Until next time, be seeing you.
Episode order, it's 26 on the DVD and 30 on the VHS. So again, similarly, back end of the series. New Mistron powers. Well, the whole vanishy thing, I think we've only ever seen like Mistrons do that before. So this is them kind of moving something that they haven't taken over, but I'm clutching for things now. Mistron's still at large, as ever, Captain Black, but nobody else. Is this a win or a loss? I've put down that it's a win, but I suppose it's a slight loss in that the Mistrons do damage the Expo. They just don't devastate the area with a nuclear explosion. And we will add the Driver, who I think is just called Driver. He doesn't even get a name, to the Mistron Puppets gallery. So, into the final three next week, I will be back with Inferno.